For February the 2nd, 2024, we talk about Madison, Road Warden, Portal Revolution, and much more. Welcome to Level 488. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Ben.
Yes.
Yeah. Sitting to the side last week, so Jolly could get a chance to come on for the first time in a while. How you doing?
I'm doing good. In my absence last week, there's always a magic meetup on Tuesday nights, which is when we record. So I got to go to that, made it to the finals, lost in the finals, sadly, but I had a sweet blue artifact deck.
Nice.
Ooh.
Yeah. Other than that, I went to a child's birthday party over the weekend. So that's a...
Were you invited? Clarify.
I was a plus one, so...
Okay.
I was not...
So,
I was,
wait, so technically you went to a child's birthday party that you were not invited to.
You could frame it like that, and that would be kind of hurtful, but yes, you can do that.
Your presence was authorized.
Yeah, that. Thank you, Cole. Thank you for defending me. But I got free gummy bears, so I was happy with the situation. Mm. But that is a world I knew very little about, so I
little does Ben know he is talking to a plant right now.
Oh no.
3D high from the gummy bears.
I think it's just regular Haribo gummy bears.
Yeah,
are they,
these were
where they give,
they're tame. Were
they giving out?
Wait,
okay.
So you're not, you weren't into the deep gummy bears lore?
What?
Explain.
Oh no, you thought I was joking.
I mean, I assume everything has lore, but you can't just drop that and then pause.
No, I just dropped in the Slack. You never watched the Gummy Bears TV show?
Oh, the cartoon. Okay.
It kind of tracks. Everything in the 80s had a cartoon, I feel like.
Yeah, a little bit of a lore.
How else
do
you guys sell things?
Oh, well, I mean, hopefully it wasn't too, I mean, what is there at a kid's birthday party for an adult? Just kind of hanging around talking with the parents kind of thing?
I mean, clearly gummy bears.
Awkward surface level conversations and a lot of social anxiety.
Yeah.
So
this is
where you got to find a kid to talk to. They will alleviate both of those things real quick.
Yeah. Hmm. Seek out the dog or the cat and make yourself a problem.
See, yeah. I find that generally the pro strat is very explicitly do not seek out the cat, and then the cat will find you.
Mm.
Wise.
Huh. Well, we're happy to have you back. Dennis, how about you? You were alluding to something going on. We're starting a little bit later.
It's been a happening week.
Okay.
So I'm late for a good reason. Today is Jen's birthday as we're recording.
Okay.
And so we have entered officially the 1 week each year where I make fun of her for being older than me.
Okay.
Until we are the same age again. So
you know that's going to get less funny every year, right?
No, I just get more insistent every year. So
okay.
Being louder and more obnoxious about it will make it more funny. That's my working theory.
Yeah,
I'll check in with you on that in a couple of years.
The problem is, as you get older and older, sleeping on the couch is harder and harder on your back.
She's a good sport about it. She makes fun of me for being too young. So
gotcha. Okay.
But speaking of youngsters, the real news from this week was last night, where we took an unexpected trip to the emergency room.
Oh God!
Milo is racking up quite the record in terms of number of trips. This time, I was having him practice like cutting an apple.
Okay.
And it's one of those things where I'm like, that looks that was unsafe. So just before you can even react, he kind of put it into the base of his finger. Thankfully, I have a friend who's a hand surgeon I was talking about with. He's like, yeah, that's basically the best place you can cut your finger
right.
if you're going to do it, but it did require stitches. So that was a random trip to the hospital last night. He's fine. He got, two stitches and has his index finger in a splint.
Okay.
For a couple of days just to hold it still, because that, like, that, it's right on the joint of the knuckle.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah, on the side of it. So you know, you move it too much, it's gonna yank out.
How did he handle everything?
He was not happy about it. I can tell you that.
Sure.
Yeah, he's, you know, it was scary, and I think as long as he kept it like under pressure and wasn't looking at it, he was relatively okay. But then anytime he had to look at it, he was not happy.
Yeah, I mean. I'm 36 years old. I still don't like looking when I cut.
Same.
Yeah.
Which that was the hardest part of the experience is like, okay, I know you just hit yourself with a knife. I have to look at it and like really look at it to know how bad it is.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
I can't do the kind of wince or look away thing. Like I got to examine this.
Yeah.
But he's going to be fine. But this splint is turning into a problem. Well, it's turned him into the most popular kid at school again.
I was gonna say, like, if you get through that initial pain and upset, like you've got a war wound, right?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Cool story.
Dig scars.
And his legitimate answer is, "I was playing with knives." So I would prefer he doesn't represent it that way, but that is going to win him the most points with his classmates.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, yeah, he just needs to know, don't say that to adults dressed in suits.
Yes. My daddy said not to tell you this, but it does have its downsides, though. Right before I came down to record, Milo was crying because he had gone to scratch his nose and poked himself in the eye.
Sorry. He's fine, right? He does this.
Totally fine. Totally fine.
All right.
Can't take him to the ER now. Yeah.
Yeah. I laughed, pause a beat, and then you say, yeah, he has an abrasion on his cornea.
Yeah. He's going to need a patch. No, he's perfectly fine.
I mean, the patch would probably gain even more points. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
He's speed running pirate mood.
Yeah. You know, let's go from a splint to a hook. You've got an eye patch now. I'm sure you'll get to your leg before too long. And yeah, you'll be full pirate.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, man, craziness.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's got to happen. Got to happen to him sometime, you know?
Yeah, kids are going to do that. And, you know, he will now be that much more careful around knives, I hope.
Yeah, hopefully.
Not the lesson I was, or not the way I was trying to teach the lesson, but we got there.
Yeah. Well, congrats to you all for not having him lose the finger.
Yeah, we made it. We lived another day and have all our appendages.
Yes. Nice. Moxie, how about you?
I'm just bobbing and weaving. I'm getting ready. Next week, I leave to go to Mardi Gras in New Orleans. So just kind of, you know, getting stuff ready for that.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Go in there with your friends, or is that like a family thing?
Going with one of my cousins.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I was really hoping it would be like going as a masked vigilante.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The city needs me. Not my city, strangely enough. My city is fine, but that city.
Yeah.
Huh. It's too quiet. So I need to go to where they do the crimes.
You know, hard to say.
Have you been before?
I've been to French Quarter a number of times.
Okay, but not never on the day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And this year it's also Valentine's Day is the same time. So.
Oh shit, that's gonna be popping. Yeah. Nice. Well, I would wish you luck.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah. I don't have anything. I've got nothing. I've just been doing boring
don't
stuff.
Don't mind me.
Yep, don't mind me. Just over here.
When has only doing boring stuff ever stopped us from talking about it?
Oh, true. No, I mean even more. I mean boring by the standards. I did finally find some frozen pot stickers that turn out okay.
Nice.
from Aldi. Weirdly enough. Oh.
I mean, Aldi's
okay. Well, we found the line.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. No, just nice. Pork pot stickers. I had them over some rice with some sauce. It was good.
Yeah. Sounds tasty.
Yeah. And that's where we're at. Anyway, let's talk about video games and things related to such by doing a normal show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with?
The grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Ben, you've been away the longest, so I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, I got a decent amount to talk about, but I'll try and speed run it, I guess, really quickly.
Okay.
The one like fresh new one that I have that I've played to completion is Portal Revolution. This is a fan made Portal game. I think we mentioned it like maybe in November on the podcast that it was going to come out soon.
Relatively recently, it was a news story. This the kind of like fan made sequel, one of the fan made sequels to Portal 2, right?
Exactly. And yeah, you have to nail the head. It's like one of the many. This is, I think, like the third or fourth by my count. As far
otherwise,
as
like Portal Mel, something like that.
There's Portal Stories Mel. There's Portal Reloaded, I believe, which I think is the gold standard for Portal fan made games.
Also, but, also a misnomer. Like Portal, you never have Reloaded. To reload in Portal.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something with time in that one.
But, Ben hasn't described what the game is yet. We don't know that there's no.
Well, so the most recent one's Portal Revolution. And it's unfortunately with the tale that I've kind of come to with the fan-made Portal games is it's kind of a downward sloping quality over time, it seems like. And I don't know necessarily why that is, because it seems like it's like longer amount of time to work on it. And yet the results are not less impressive.
There's probably also like an availability thing going on, like with a certain number of individual pieces, you run out of arrangements that you can make of them. Unless this is adding, you know, new doodads and new puzzle elements.
They do add, so I suppose I should get the compliments in before I give it too much of a damnation, but to the credit of the game, it's a pretty sizable length game. I think it took me maybe 10 to 20 hours to finish.
Oh, wow.
It has voice acting from, I think, two voice actors that they performed very well. And they do a good job of kind of like slowly adding mechanics throughout the game, so that part's really well paced. It's just that the puzzle quality is like pretty low, in my opinion. And the narrative like doesn't exactly stick the landing. It kind of feels like a remix or like a cover of like Portal 2, but it's just, it's very equivalent to if like a fan made of a version of like a song that someone's made. It's like kind of that level of quality, it feels like.
Yeah.
Especially because there's several puzzles where it's like you could have solved them with less elements in certain places, but you solve it with like more than you need to in a couple different places. So it's like some of the things, it's like even on a first pass, it's like you could kind of spot like ways that you could improve the game. So that's not very good. The story itself, I mean, I guess I'm gonna give some mild spoilers to the story.
That's fine. I mean, I want to know what direction they went with it.
So basically, fast forward if you don't want to hear that, and I feel comfortable doing this because I'm basically saying it's not worth your time to play the game. But basically there's two different characters you run into. It's two different personality spheres. This takes place after Portal 2, like well after it. And the personalities of the personality spheres themselves like are not rigidly defined. It's like they kind of go for like a Wheatley Light with the first character that you run into.
Okay.
Where it's like they sound kind of bumbling at times, but it's like it's very like inconsistent, both in like the writing and how it's performed. And then the second personality sphere is Australian, and that's the personality it feels like. There's stuff kind of beyond that, and they try and kind of work a backstory in there. But overall, like, yeah, the narrative feels a little bit half-baked. I guess some kudos that I'll give, though, is the part of like what you're trying to do is get to the surface of the base and like get out of there. So there are a couple levels where there is like an honest to goodness skybox where you can see the outside, and that's really cool. That's like a nice combo breaker. The one compliment I will give to the game is they did try to add new elements and try and innovate, I guess, on what's already there and do some things that hadn't been done before, namely with the laser puzzles that existed before. They introduced a new mechanic where it's like two laser boxes where if a laser is shined on one, the other one will project a laser and vice versa. And that actually led to some pretty interesting puzzles, especially where it's like you can get something to shoot itself and then activate the other one kind of, or like it kind of,
it's like a laser portal.
It's like a laser Ouroboros kind of.
Yeah. Oh no.
Yeah. But you can. But it's. But yeah. But there's. So it's a cool concept. It could have been innovated on maybe a little bit more, and that's kind of. That's kind of the root of the problem is like a lot of times the solutions are really obvious where it's like, okay, there's only one thing I can do. So I'm going to do that.
Right.
Oh, that was the solution. Okay, cool. But I don't, that's not to like puzzle design is hard. It's more just showing how good Portal 2 is because it's like getting a really good puzzle that like jukes the player. So that they think it's one direction, but it's actually another is really, really hard to design around. So
it's like Portal is a product that was arrived at through so much more testing than even a like an indie team with a community behind it could have, because it's not just the hours testing, but also like a methodology behind iterating using that, you know? So like,
and having just, like paid game designers helps as well.
Well, yes. Yeah. There's also that, but
So I don't know what much, what other mechanics can I talk about? Go ahead.
Does it use the goo from Portal 2?
Yeah, it uses the goo. They use tubes in this one, which is kind of interesting, where they'll have like a Airstream type portal or a like tube or whatever that you jump into and it'll shoot you out another spot. But they have that interactable with like boxes you can shove them through, or like goo can go through them and stuff. And you can kind of use those to different effects. So for example, like if there's like a laser grid that would normally kill a cube, but there's like this pneumatic tube that goes through the field, you can throw the cube through the tube and it'll go through. So it can get through an area that it would otherwise not be able to get through. So that was kind of cool. There's some innovation there, especially because just using the airflow of like the sucking or blowing, using that with portals. Like there was, some mechanics there that they explored those were good. Those were honestly good. Gotcha. Good. The fact that they were able to make those new mechanics. Again, they might not have had like the best, like puzzles to demonstrate them or the best, like order of teaching you things. But at least those innovations on the mechanics were interesting for when they had them. Yeah. So yeah, I don't have a whole lot to say beyond that, I guess. If you like Portal and maybe you want a reminder of like the game, you could try this out, but it does very much feel like a watered down version of Portal 2, the good stuff.
Is there another one of the fan-made sequels, you know, fan-made like foolish game entries that you prefer more to this one, or?
Pardon my typing, but I believe it's Portal Reloaded is the one that has a time portal. Yes. Okay. That one is worth playing. That came out in 2021, so it's still like relatively fresh. Okay. That one has the same feeling as like the Portal games, where you know what the mechanics are and you have a good understanding of the space you're in, and so you actually go through the thought process of okay, how can I solve this puzzle? And you do like work backwards and figure things out like that. That is worth playing, and I think that is worth people's time. Because the quality of that product, you could believe that Valve would have put that out. And that's and that's a huge compliment. So
cool.
Check
at that this one point, out. I'm not sure I believe that Valve will put out any game.
Yeah. Well, they didn't name it 3, so at least you can still kind of believe it in that sense. But so I think that's all I gotta say about Portal Revolution is play Portal Reloaded instead.
That's nice to have a play this, not that kind of thing, you know?
Sure, sure. All right. And then second game I want to talk about that I've only played a little bit of is a game called Road Warden, which is this was recommended from a friend. This is like a text-based adventure kind of game. It is currently like $5 on Steam, and it's like a pretty highly rated game. I've only played maybe 2 or 3 hours of this, but it's a semi interesting game. If you're somebody who likes text-based adventure games, then this is like definitely something you should look for.
So you mean like Colossal Cave Adventure, that sort of thing?
I don't have a reference for that game.
This looks more like a game book kind of thing. Yeah, like a sorcery or something like that, where you're making choices and it's pulling from stats and you've got like different currencies and stuff.
Yeah, it adds a few RPG elements into it where has like niceties of what you would find in like maybe an Elder Scrolls type game where it's like you have an inventory, there's a map that you go, you can go to villages and talk to people. The writing is pretty strong because it basically has its own set of lore of like what's allowed in this world and what's not. You play a character mm-hmm. called the Road Warden, where it's like the world is very like dense with forest and like monsters that like live in the forest. And the Road Wardens kind of maintain the trails between towns and try and keep those safe so that people can travel on them. Mm-hmm. But there's things like necromancy or mages or dragons and stuff in this world. So there's plenty of like fantasy elements, but it's kind of like picked and choose upon like what exists in this world.
Yeah.
So this isn't like post-apocalyptic Road Warden as in like you're driving around in a car with like wrapped in barbed wire.
It's not like Mad Max.
Okay.
Yeah, it's something different than that. But it keeps like it keeps these minor RPG elements where you pick a class that you are up front and you have like one of three choices. You can be a scholar, a fighter, or a mage, I think, are the three mm-hmm. options. And those will come into play kind of as needed, like in this a la like a Obsidian game where it's like, oh, here's a dialogue option. Mm-hmm. That's unlocked because you're a scholar. Or on the other side of things, it's like here you need to run away from a fight because you're a scholar and not a fighter. It's like, yeah. Okay.
I'm a reader, not a fighter.
Huh?
I'm a reader, not a fighter.
That's right. Yeah. So there's like a decent sense of balance there of like, you kind of see your own special content depending upon what class you pick, but then also you have like basically a set of meters you're responsible for where it's like, you have like how well fed you are, how presentable your clothing is, mm-hmm. Like how well rested you are. I think I mentioned that one already. Maybe there's like one other one, and those kind of affect your interactions with people. So, for example, if your clothes are covered in blood, then your charisma innately goes down. It doesn't matter.
Right.
People
are going to not be terribly receptive to what you're trying to sell them if you're doused in blood. Yeah,
exactly.
Come on, man. Why are you being so closed-minded?
Yeah. I mean,
covered in blood.
On the other hand, if they're cool with it, be careful. Those are vampires.
Yeah. and they have a kind of cool mechanic where it's like there's a lot of times where you'll come to a new scene and basically shows you only what you can see in it. So it might be like an overview of like a city or something like that. And it'll just show you like the front gates and the field in front of it. But then as you like choose to look around, it'll expose like what you can see in this like two-dimensional picture that they're showing you. So, for mm-hmm. example, if you like walk in through the front gate, it'll show you the front half of the town. Then you can choose to explore the northwest or the northeast or something like that. And it'll like slowly reveal more of the village and stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, this is like kind of a small game, smaller size game, but it seems kind of interesting. It seems like it could be something that would be up basically anyone else on the podcast alley if they were in the right mood for it. So,
Which class did you go with?
I went with the scholar because that's what I do. I always pick tinker, always pick scholar, that sort of thing. And so the benefits that I see are kind of what I alluded to before, where it's like you can read text and so you can kind of get clues and access like secret passages and places you might not otherwise. And then you'll come upon goblins and you'll have to run away because you cannot fight. So,
the other characters are illiterate.
Yes, I think so.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Hmm. Or at least like the mage has like their own language that's whatever, magic language or something.
Yeah.
So I do like that aspect of it, though, that it kind of leaves more to explore if you want to go back for a subsequent playthrough. Mm-hmm. But there's a good amount of like long-term missions and short-term missions that I'm doing right now. Like you try and make money to buy things and you kind of like talk to all the people at the inns and make friends with them. And you kind of care about that because that's where you need to sleep to like refill your stats. So there's kind of a cool like economical system going on as well on top of the, like RPG system. So, mm-hmm. It's a short little game. It seems cool. I don't think it's terribly long. I think it's like 11 hours total to beat. I don't know if I'll finish it or not, but we'll see if I play it in the coming weeks. So
looks neat. That's an interesting publisher behind them too. They're the ones who did publish the End Zone games, those post-nuclear colony builder ones that I've talked about before. They've got a bunch of different kind of weird stuff. Assemble is the name of it.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right, and then I have two more pseudo things to talk about. One, Resident Evil VR, I've still played that. I'm in the night part now. It's still fun. I still really like playing that game. It's a, it's slowly becoming, I think, the best made VR game that I've played, which even though it's a port.
Is this 4?
It's yeah, it's the Resident Evil 4 remake on the PSVR.
Nice.
It's yeah, because it's like the graphics look really good and it's it just functions, you know, like and it's and it's like retroactively making my original playthrough better because it's like this totally works as both versions of the game.
Yeah.
It's pretty damning that like you can say like, oh yeah, the game actually works, best VR game ever.
Well, what I mean by that is like when I played it through the first time, I had no inkling of a thought of like, oh, this is definitely like a VR type game, especially since it was in like third person. But you can go back and play the entire thing in first person and it just it works like it. You don't like you'd think you'd have issues with just like, OK, if they made the game for like the camera to be behind you the entire time, like how would that translate if you're in first person and how would it look or would it be like rough around the edges? But it's not. It's like it just. Yeah.
So when you like suplex someone, does the camera literally like have you flinging yourself through the air?
No, basically anytime your head movement would be like too dramatic, they'll cut back to third person and show you like whatever the cutscene animation is. Like say if you roundhouse kick someone, and then you'll jump back into first person mode immediately after.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Do you find
I am very okay with that decision?
Yeah. I mean, it just, it would just be a way to make everybody sick. They do that in the Quest remake of the original RE4. Do you find that the VR version is easier or harder for you?
It's different. Like the shooting far away is harder, the shooting up close is easier, the reloading is harder, the looking around is easier. So it's like it's just these weird trade-offs where like earlier today I got stuck where I could not quickly reload my gun and I had like 2 or 3 zombies on me. So then it's a different problem than if you're playing the regular game. Like you're then thinking, okay, I can pull out my shotgun or I can pull out a grenade or I can pull out a knife and try and switch to that and like fend them off that way. And like, that's the problem you're trying to solve. Whereas in the first one, you're like, reloading's not even an issue. You're just trying to like line up the shot is what you're trying to do. So you're looking for like that red dot sight.
So,
yeah,
but it manages to be an interesting problem rather than a frustrating one.
Yeah, but yeah, it's that. Yeah, it's a trade off of what the strategy is. It's not like clearly better or worse. So,
did they add in strafing for the remake?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
No, so in the original RE4, there was no way to when you were moving, or when you were aiming, or even when you were like moving around. It was basically all tank controls. You could not move when you were aiming, and even when you were not aiming, it was just, you know, move forward, move back, rotate.
Okay. So that was a big problem. Like if there's a doorway and the enemy is like hiding behind the door, you literally had to like walk in, expose your back to them, and then turn to face them.
In the 4 remake, non-VR, there is strafing. It plays like a modern third person shooter.
In the VR, you can reach through the window with a knife and stab them in the face.
Yep.
By just waving it around wildly. Anyway, I don't have much to say about it other than it's still very good. So if people have VRs and they're interested, that's definitely worth a playthrough, I think. And it's a free upgrade from the regular game, which you should have had already. So
yeah, well, you have to have PlayStation VR 2.
Yeah, yes, I was gonna ask if this is true on just the OG PSVR.
What?
No, it's just a PSVR 2. You've got to play it on PS5.
I assume not. Yeah.
All right, so there's one more that I don't know whether or not I should talk about or not. I watched someone play Suicide Squad for 2 hours yesterday on their early access.
Sorry.
I don't know if that counts to talk about it or not. I want to talk about it a little bit, but what do you guys think?
I mean, I want to hear what experience they had, as long as everybody understands that this is not you buying it and playing it. Yeah, this is not you having, I don't care what you buy, but this is not you playing it in your hands.
Yes, like, this is secondhand watching somebody play it. Right. It was Moist Critical was the streamer, I guess, for reference to give credit. But yeah, watched it for 2 hours is basically watching a tutorial on the first 2 hours of the game. It's basically just doing the same thing over and over again. Well, that's a weird way to phrase it. It's a looter shooter that has a narrative, and like the narrative actually does seem more compelling or more meatier than I thought it would be, as far as like in the same fashion that they had the Arkham games. They do a good job of slow rolling out characters and like okay. introducing them in kind of like surprising and innovative ways.
But it's not like a big map where you're going and doing missions and unlocking and progressing the story. It is looter shooter. Okay.
It is a looter shooter where you start with the four people like standing at the same wall, opening it up, jumping and traversing around one section of the city, going towards a boss fight of some kind. But it's all just jumping around and shooting people.
Wait, what
which is
what
like... Oh, go ahead. What?
So are we meaning like that as compared to say like the Arkham games or?
Yeah, the Arkham games, which had a little bit, which was more kind of narrative driven, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Arkham games being like, you know, open world Metroidvania style, you go and you get a new gadget that lets you do different stuff.
Yeah. But also like the emphasis of the game, it wasn't like, I doubt that many people played that game in the way that they would play like an open world game like GTA, where it's like, oh, I want to do all the,
you know,
gang turf warfare things first, and it's always like, here's the mission that I need to go do as Batman, maybe I'll stop and do this on the side or something like but yeah, anyway, I guess all I will say is like the game does not look great enough that I was like, I'm gonna stop watching this and play this myself. The person who was playing it said that the movement felt very clean and very, very good, so I guess there's points in that direction. And then their criticism of the game is kind of the same one I have, where it's like, it's just, I don't know why this game is like a looter shooter and why they wrapped it in that piece, because like,
well, I mean,
it just feels like such at odds because they have this like rich narrative bank that they have here. And then it's just a weird shooty game. So.
See, I thought that was an answered question. I mean, is it just because they wanted to make a live service game?
Yeah, but I guess the
it's
question
because
is
they wanted
still
to make money.
Right.
I guess the
in
question
live service
yeah, I mean,
they could do that.
But it's like, did they not make money through the Arkham games? Like, I mean, I guess the answer is like they want to make more money, but then
I mean,
it's like,
yeah, you have to make more money because capitalism.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't think that plan's going to work out great for him, but who knows?
I mean, like, it just that there doesn't seem to be demand for it. Like nobody, I mean, obviously not nobody, but like I've not seen like a positive like, oh, this feels like it's for me kind of reaction to it.
I think what in my mind what it is, you know, Destiny 2 had its day where it was the money printing machine, but the luster's kind of wearing off that, so they put out a Destiny 2 game with a existing IP on it.
Yeah.
And really, I think the IP is, you know, is the afterthought. And it's like, how do you keep this relevant so we can make more money off of it?
It does feel late to the party in terms of people's patience for this kind of thing broadly.
Well, I mean, isn't that literally the entire story of this game? Like they came out and said, we're going to make a looter shooter right as the community basically published a ton of think pieces about how looter shooters suck.
Well, yeah. And also like,
or not looter shooters, I'm sorry, live service. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Well, there was also the, this was going to release a few years ago, at least I think a couple years ago, they had like a big, public unveiling of it. And people were like, wait a minute, what's this? Like, why is Rocksteady, you know, for all the misstep that Arkham Knight was, like, why is this, this doesn't line up, why and how, you know, kind of deal. And like, no, okay, well, we'll rework it and make it less of this kind of thing. And apparently they didn't make it less of that kind of thing enough.
Yeah.
What was the DC, like, you play as all the Robins game? Wasn't that, is that yet to come out, or did that come and go?
Gotham Knights or something
Gotham
like that?
Gotham Knights, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it's out or not.
Yeah, it's out. It's been out for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, just continuing the DC tradition of mediocrity in any medium except their original one.
But oh, I mean, no, just... no, and they make great animated stuff.
No, there you go.
It's just and like all of this is to, you know, to say there's a, you know, there's a big caveat behind this, which is like normies might be going crazy for this. I have no idea. Nobody whose insight I am seeing is clamoring for this. I look at video footage of people playing this. It looks like weightless nonsense. Like,
yeah,
why? I think all the quote unquote normies are still playing Power World.
But I mean, I don't even mean that disparagingly. It's just people who aren't in the game, in the game talkers circle, kind of thing. Right.
Yeah. People who aren't in the cool guys club.
But it's just like, I don't know. Everything on the screen looks super tiny. And why are all these heroes, regardless of if they use guns as their thing, why are they all flying around and rapid firing at tiny little things? Like every stat sheet that I see in it, it's like plus 1.3% damage to Batman coded enemies or Batman type enemies. I'm serious. Yeah. It's just like
Batman coded enemies.
Batman type
enemies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty rough, man. And it's a pretty rough about face because it's like, given how much like passion was in the Arkane games, and like, yeah, like they got actual comic book writers to write the narrative for that. And like, maybe they did that here, but it's just like, it's just so awkward here.
Yeah.
And like, I will say the environment looks good, or like the setting and the world you're in looks good, even though it's or the individual assets look good, I guess. Like,
right.
The fact it's in like this purple wasteland that you're like jumping from island to island, that's less cool. But
I don't know. I mean, and to underline this for anybody who, you know, because it's been so long since a Rocksteady game has come out, like,
yeah, like 9 years.
You're a main person of this thing. Like, you are like, love the Arkham games, mm-hmm. is fair to say, right?
Yeah.
Well, is this that like counter based gameplay?
No, I don't think that's counter based. Like, there's something with like, I guess there's a parry like system with the gun fighting. I didn't entirely understand, but it's not like the two button like fighting system like it was in Batman, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, it's not
that
the,
seems
yeah,
that unfortunate.
That momentum based kind of thing. Yeah, so this is just underline like the fact that this is not. You know, this should be aimed right for you, but like, you watch somebody play for 2 hours and to be like, yeah, I'm good.
Oh, you can play as Captain Boomerang though, so that's something.
Everyone's memeing on him, right? Like, because nobody knows who he is.
Yeah.
But
that's
a
superpower.
Like, he throws a boomerang.
His
mental Teflon man
is throwing things and being very Australian.
Yeah. Second Australian character of the episode.
that continent's last country is not getting out of this unscathed. Leading this episode.
The one other thing I want to point out is like things like the mechanics of the Batman Arkham games are in service of like the immersion of the character. So it's like the tap-a-tap-a fighting system is in service of the fact that you're, you know, being as Batman, you're supposed to feel like you should like be able to beat down thugs and like put them in the hospital or whatever. And like,
yeah, totally. No.
And then there's other systems they have in the game, like the Predator part where it's like you're sneaking up on people and laying traps and stuff like that. And again, that's in service of the immersion of the character, where it's like, as you pointed out, Cole, it's like everybody has the same controls, even though it's four distinct characters. It's like everyone's flying around and shooting guns at people that are a bunch of like zombie-like creatures, you know, which kind of loosely fits the narrative based on who the bad guy is. But it's just like, yeah, it just does not stick the landing. And it's like, I don't know who decided that that should be the format of the game, but just like, it's just flawed from the start, it looks like. So
I think that's enough time on a game we haven't played.
Until the end boss.
Ultra. Yes. Is that all you got?
That's all I got.
Okay. I'll go, cause mine should be pretty quick. To follow up on last week, I buckled down and I finished the Final Fantasy VII Remake.
I was hoping you were going to say Power World.
No. Yeah.
He played all the way through it.
As far as I know, it doesn't even have an ending. Finish up Final Fantasy VII Remake. It's good. You know, like the pacing is a little fucked just because they turned, you know, the first 3 hours of Final Fantasy VII into a full game. It's not as bad as you would think. given the case, ended up being about 40 hours. And, you know, there's some like padding in the hallway combat or whatever, but like the boss encounter kind of design continued to be pretty interesting and pull out new tricks, in using that weird kind of character action, you know, tappa-tappa combat intermixed with issuing these commands and, you know, controlling a whole party kind of in the midst of that, you know. I managed to be unspoiled on what happens in this game and how it differs from the original up until I actually beat it. So hooray for me. I knew some broad strokes.
That takes effort.
Yeah, I knew some broad strokes that like, hey, this is a game that is very aware that it is a remake. I was getting up to the point where it would be very impractical for me to continue being unaware as the next remake, as Rebirth is.
I'm just imagining you getting to the enemy like, oh man, I spoiled it for myself by playing it.
No. Yeah. So it's good. You know, I enjoy it. I did all the optional boss stuff or whatever. And I am moving in to talk about or to play the little expansion that they had, the intermission or whatever, where you're playing as Yuffie. But I have not played enough of that to talk about it.
Is it paid DLC or?
Yes. Yeah. It's like if you buy it on PS5 or if you buy it on PC, which is where I played it this time, you just get it. It's like a collector's edition kind of thing, but okay, it's like cool. It's its own like 8-hour campaign kind of deal.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Any wrap up questions about Final Fantasy VII Remake?
Score wise, do they do anything with the music that feels like it echoes the idea of kind of remixing the story?
Oh yeah. The music is great. Obviously like the dramatic score, reusing all the themes and then kind of escalating them as stuff starts getting unpredictable. Like all of that is very good. It is hard to fuck up when your source material, you know, just, oh, we can always fall back on this amazing, these amazing compositions that were done for the original.
Yeah.
What's very impressive, is just the sheer number of kind of like genre remixes of different songs, you know, not just from that portion of the game, but, just within, you know, like from the entirety of the main game, but like, here's this track, but like, it's a bossa nova, like it was released, in the world as this particular genre of music. And like, it's not worked in, like, it's not like there's going to be a dramatic moment. And then suddenly here's a bossa nova version of the, you know, the Cosmo Canyon theme or whatever.
And why not?
Well, it's actually more interesting than that, which is you encounter all of this, like all these musics, they're used as diegetic music within the world. So like when you approach a new like vendor or a new like item vending machine kind of thing, it'll just be like playing that and you can buy that track and add it in and then you can play it at jukeboxes if you want to. So you're just going to be walking out in the world. You think, hey, wait a minute, I recognize that tune. And then you can actually like, just like buy that and add it to your collection, if you want to. So it's really neat to just kind of have all of these in-house done, kind of style parodies almost, using these classic themes. So it owns actually, you know?
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
Score wise, what would you rate it?
Oh, I don't know. Probably like a 7.5 or an 8, something like that.
All right.
Yeah. You know, up there, but not like, you know, not huge. I wouldn't say run, don't walk. Your opinion about this as, you know, about the remake as an endeavor is probably sealed. You know, like you probably decided how you feel about it long ago. But I don't know. I don't regret my time with it or anything. And I have enough affection for the source material and, you know, just view those spaces from the original game as holy enough that seeing them reimagined and seeing them not fuck it up is kind of worth it on its own a little bit. And that's before you get to like the genuinely interesting stuff they do with the combat. And then minus just kind of, you know, how padded out some of the hallway sections feel, you know? Yeah.
Very cool.
So that's the follow-up that I have. A new thing that I'm in the middle of playing, streaming actually, is a first-person horror game that was released in 2022 called Madison. Moxie, you were in the stream watching me play a little bit of this.
Yeah, and you've got you're really enjoying it.
Yeah, man, just having the time of my life. man, I went into this really, really wanting to like it. I had heard nothing but good things. I'd seen amazing, you know, screenshots and little videos. It was kind of at the top of some lists of like best horror games that came out in 2022. And yeah, this is this is some Flashlight House nonsense. Yeah. So the concept is you are this young man named Luca, who is currently fighting off and undergoing a demon possession. And you are trying to escape from this house where it is happening. The thing that is possessing you is something that possessed this woman named Madison several decades ago and made her kill her family. And here's you kind of going through that again. The hub is the house, where you're going around and kind of searching for ways to unlock new parts of it. And then you get into, you know, a different area of it. And then it turns into a little bit of a Layers of Fear, spacey, wacy kind of deal, where everything is just kind of arbitrary and you're trying to find a way forward. Where this stands out above Layers of Fear, which is little more than a, you know, just a walking sim with kind of a the non-Euclidean geometry kind of part of it. This actually does have puzzles, some of which are interesting, some of which require a little bit of math, some of which require, you know, just
like scratch paper math, or
yeah,
just
scratch paper math. Nothing hard. Yeah, nothing wild. But like, you know, just like the kind of little math puzzle that, you know, does not involve anything more than a two digit number, but it is very easy to overthink it, you know, kind of thing. you know, which is as, you know, as much of a danger in a puzzle game as underthinking it, you know.
Sure.
So there's that. The kind of conceit around this is that you have a like a Polaroid instant camera, and you can snap photos of things, and this can do a few different things. Like sometimes something like a clue will only show up in the photo of the thing that you snapped. Sometimes it will affect a change in the world. There's one, I'll talk about it as an example of like what's kind of wrong with this, but like, use it to do like time travel, and some of these, you know, taking a picture of a different thing and then kind of warping into a different version of the space that you're in.
Huh.
This is a neat concept, but you run into the, kind of like Alan Wake 2 world state problem a little bit sometimes, where it is expecting you to keep track of what is changing in this very like high visual detail, high visual clutter kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you are like switching around between different versions of the world, not with no signaling of what is changed. And then in addition, when I call this Flashlight House nonsense, you know, when you're in the house or even when you're in these little like terminus dungeon kind of things, there's really no indication when you do something, what it is you're supposed to go. Nothing is really connected by logic, you know? So it's just like, all right, I did something. I have no idea what I need to do next. So I need to go and walk over every single bit of space to see what changed, maybe
brute force it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah because it is not like it's not connected by logic. This is such a nitpick, but the ambient sound design includes a whole bunch of like you'll hear like the sounds of doors creaking open, or you know, like something shifting or whatever. So like no. I'll be going around wondering, you know, I'll do something like, hey, what changed? And then you hear, you think, oh man, a door opened. Sweet. And I go looking for it because it sounded like it was kind of behind me. No, that was just noise, you asshole.
Oh, that's making me itchy. Oh,
you thought
no.
Something in the game meant something. You absolute buffoon.
Oh, I need to take a shower.
Yeah, yeah. It's man, it's really irritating. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think my favorite part of this is the fact that in this case, I'm doing air quotes, demonic possession apparently just means randomly stab you in the stomach.
Yeah, so that's
wait,
the other thing.
Stab you or stab yourself?
Or randomly creak doors, it sounds like.
Yeah, so what Moxie's talking about is there's this very protracted sequence that took up most of my play session on Saturday where you are in a church. Like you end up kind of whisked away to this church, and there are three different time periods you can go to. In this, one is 19, one is present day, and it's all broken down and covered in graffiti. There's not much to do there, but there's also 1987 and 1951. 1987 and 1951 don't look different enough for you to be able to tell which one you're in.
Ooh.
Also, the 1951 version has a ghost of a murdered Nazi like concentration guard, you know, slaughterer kind of guy. His wife killed him and now he's haunting this place.
He killed Nazi concentration camp guards? Or
no, he slaughtered at a he was responsible for killing the people in the concentration camps. Yeah. And then his wife found out what he did and then killed him because she couldn't stand him to be alive. Fine, a little bit edgy playing with live ammo, but whatever. The ghost of this guy walking around in a gas mask acts as a little bit of a time limit when you're in the 1951 version. A time limit for a stage where you have four different mazes that you have to go down. And the mazes do not change between the two different time periods. What you have is you have four different colored candles. You have to go into that colored maze. You have to go into one of the mazes and then place one of the candles under the proper under the proper painting that's coded for the color of the maze or whatever, right? But it is four mazes to accomplish this. You're going to have to go through them probably eight times while you have maybe a minute or two with this thing hunting you down and killing you and then taking you back to the start, not to the start of the 1951 version, a version of it when you are when you're there, no, back to 2022. So you have to go to 1987 and then warp from 1987 to 1951 to maybe get back to the proper version of the maze that you were going to. You thought that this blue candle went into the blue maze in 1951. Fuck you for solving it in 1951. Turns out it's in 1987, you asshole, you clod. So you gotta go do it again. It's outright, it's pretty bad. I don't care for it. I'm gonna finish it because I want to see if they have cool ideas, you know, coming out the back, but like, I don't know.
Hear me out. Five color maze.
Yeah. Somebody in chat joked like, okay, you know, next place you've got eight mazes and three different time periods. And like the Polaroid camera affecting the world is a cool idea. I would like to see that done in an interesting way and, you know, in horror, but no, nothing, no dice.
Man,
I've got no idea how big the team is. So I don't know if this is like, you know, it's pretty, this has to have a bunch of people working on it because it's really high fidelity is the thing.
Yeah. The presentation looks good on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You can do that without a team. Just use AI assets.
Oh, of course. I have no idea if this is using AI assets. Nobody go after them for anything. Nobody go after anybody that we talk about unless we tell you. But
yeah.
We Madison. Yeah. Madison. I just wish it, I wish it was better. Yeah. And that's all I got.
Theme of the week so far.
Wish it was better. Yeah.
Well, I've got a game I wish I was better at.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a problem. I am deep into mainlining Diablo 4 seasonal stuff.
Okay. So this is the one with the you're in the season with the programmable buddy.
Programmable buddy, yep, and the trap focused vaults. Mm-hmm. It is still just a ton of fun to play. I'm still addicted to hardcore mode. But goddamn, last season, I think Cole, you commented like, it sounds like you're just feeding barbarians to demons.
Yeah.
That's kind of true again, just with sorcerers this time.
Okay.
It's so bad. The dumb ways I die. It's all preventable. And I think that is probably the main thought of like, okay, I am starting to see the choices that are leading me to death.
Okay.
And it feels less like, oh, well, you know, you just got, the random number generator screwed you. And it's like, oh no, I should have been running the second I saw that boss come on screen, or like, I shouldn't have even gone to that dungeon, or, you tried to stop and update your points in the middle of a combat, or what have you. Favorite one so far is you thought, so there's in the seasonal content, you like go through an area as a dungeon and then you come back to it as like a hub world. So basically like clear out a base for yourself. Right.
Okay.
And I was going through it the first time as a dungeon, cleared a room and just, had something call my attention, muscle memory, assuming it was a safe space. Now, I just set my Steam Deck down.
Okay. That seems like a bad idea based on the way the story, based on the way stories work. Yeah.
Yep. And then came back to see my sorcerer had died to, just a little swarm of the most pathetic, easy enemies out there. But yeah, it was not yet a base. It was still a dungeon. I should not have done that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's one sorcerer down. Yeah. Are you just naming them sequentially?
No, actually, so I'm having fun in character creation, and that makes the incentive to keep these guys alive that much lower.
Okay.
So what I do is, I'll pick sorcerer, and then I just randomize in character creation until I see something that sparks the idea for a funny name.
Okay.
And then I'll customize it a little bit to fit the name. But let's see, I've had so my first one was just called Icy. Spelled like E-Y-E-S-E-E, but it's, I'm using ice and shock powers, so I thought that was fun.
Okay.
Then I had Goober, where burr is like burr, it's cold. Then I had Sad Keanu.
Okay.
Sad Keanu is the one that died especially fast. Sorry, Sad Keanu. The next one was Dr. Jill Biden.
Okay.
Which honestly brought me so much joy. I don't know why. Every time I logged in, I got the furthest with her.
Okay.
And then got, tangled with an enemy that had a very dangerous set of affixes where, again, I should have known, nope, you're not ready for that. And then currently I am on, or no. So after that I had a Scaredy Cat.
Okay.
Cause I was very sad at losing Dr. Jill Biden and wanted to remind myself throughout to be more paranoid.
Okay.
Scaredy Cat died, and now I am on Willem Dafoe.
so you said
not Willem Dafriend,
right?
I thought about doing like Wizard Dafoe, but I was like,
just, might as well. This, just the guy.
Yeah, it looks like him. That's
so I'm surprised there wasn't this. I'm surprised it wasn't a filter like, hey, you can't name this after a real person. But
yeah, I guess I haven't tried anything overtly offensive. Maybe that'll be the next run. Depends on how frustratingly I die.
No.
But hopefully that'll happen less and less. But anyway, so I'm getting pretty good at getting up into world tier 3. For anyone not familiar with the game, you kind of start in one version of the world. And then, if you get powerful enough, you can do a special dungeon, very difficult, but gives you a new version of the world where everything is more difficult and you get more XP from everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there's special items that will only drop in the higher world tiers, etc. So I've made it up to world tier 3 pretty consistently. My goal now is to get somebody into world tier 4, which has not happened yet.
How many world tiers are there?
4 is the highest. 4 is the highest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But then, then you start, there's all sorts of optional bosses you can start taking down. There is a lot to do even in world tier 4. This is the perfect Steam Deck game.
Right. Except when you set it down and then you die.
Well, yeah, that is an imperfect player for the perfect Steam Deck game, I guess.
Okay. So that's how we're.
It doesn't fail you, you fail it. Yes.
Can you tell how deep I'm in?
It feels like the game's emotionally abusing you, Dennis.
I have it timed out. It takes about 3 hours to get a character up into world tier 3.
Okay.
And I've gotten I think two of the five up into world tier three.
And you're specifically fucking around with hardcore because those added stakes thrill you somehow.
Because I can feel it in my loins when I almost die.
All right.
I just feel anymore.
Wish you didn't say that.
I tried it and then I went back to regular and was just like, well, this doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I think there is something to it. Thinking of it as a run based kind of thing instead of this is my one character for the season is just more fun for me because the game is not okay. Let's grind up the tiny increments on this character that you get, you know, when you're at the end game. It's, you know, let's go through all the fun equipment upgrading and big new verb getting of the early game. And just see how fast and how far we can push it. And if I get to the end game stuff, well, right. Then that's fun because I earned it versus just waltzing there thoughtlessly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So to sum up, I have a problem.
I mean,
that sounds about right.
Awareness is the first yes. step. So
I'll let you know when I stop having fun.
Okay.
And then we'll see.
Cool.
You know, sometimes you just got to wait for someone to be ready to change.
Yeah. Diablo 4,
Season of the Construct specifically.
Hmm. Okay. Anything else?
I honestly, no.
Okay.
it is too accessible. I'm at my main station. It's there. Right. I'm on my Steam Deck. It's there. I dream. It's there.
Right.
No. Huh.
Oh God damn it. You know, I realized that blinking help, doesn't work when you're on a podcast.
What do you mean blinking?
Blinking. I need help.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good. Right.
Torture.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. So
no, I'm very much enjoying this game.
Cool. Moxie, you're up.
Hey, let's see here. So what, time is an illusion now. So I need to figure out, not just where have I been playing, but where have I been playing since last week.
Right.
So I've been binging a lot of Final Fantasy XIV.
14.
And mainly just been power leveling my trade skills.
Okay.
The kind of interesting thing here is that all of the crafting skills, whenever you want to craft something, it's actually kind of a mini puzzle.
How so?
So basically, you have, depending on what you're trying to craft, you have a certain number, amount of, I think it's progress, which once you get that many points, the item is crafted, and a certain, amount of quality, and the closer you are to filling out, you know, getting the maximum amount of quality, the higher chance you get of getting a high quality version of whatever you're crafting.
Okay.
And you have various steps, various actions you can take that either increase progress, increase quality, or various other things. However, the catch is that the thing you're crafting has a certain amount of durability, and each action you take decreases the durability. So you have to max out the progress before you get to zero durability.
Mm-hmm. And that's not a linear route. Like, that's not the same every time.
So it is the same in terms of like the numbers, you know, how much durability, that sort of thing. However, what's different is, one, there's just a whole bunch of different, actions you can take. So there's things like, one action might increase, quality at double the effectiveness of your normal ability that does that. However, 50% of the time it fails.
Right. Got so you have it. A chance okay. of overextending and you end up with a dud.
Right. Yeah. Or you have things where it's like there's a ability where the next four quality increases are more effective. Or for like the next four actions, quality increases more effective. What makes that more difficult is you also have each time you take a action, you know, there's a little thing that shows that your next action will either be poor, good, normal, or excellent. And so it's things where you might, you know, want to balance, you know, making sure that when you, and those only affect quality. So you might want to make sure that when those are excellent, you're doing quality increasing actions. And when they're poor, you're doing, or normal, you're doing progress increasing actions. However, that means you have to try to anticipate, you know, if this buff is only going to be active within like the next four moves.
Right.
That's this feels like a game unto itself.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. It sounds like a little, it's like a little strategy game. Like what do you do with your output from this? Obviously you want to make the best possible thing because that will level up the stat in the class more, you know, but like, are you selling this stuff back? Are you recouping cost? Are the people buying this, or is it going straight into like the NPC economy? Like what's the output for what you're making?
Sure. So, you know, there is a, auction house. And so, you know, there definitely is a player economy. And it seems like at the very least, well, I'll actually get to that in a moment. The main thing I'm doing with it right now is there's these repeatable quests called like Leva Heists or something, because everything has to have a silly name.
Yep.
Where they'll basically say like, hey, I want you to craft me, you know, so many of this item. And if the items are you turn in are high quality, or at least one of them is, you get double the reward.
Okay.
So it's called a Leva Heist and you're not heisting anything?
No. I don't understand.
That's any Final Fantasy after the from 10 on, everything is named something really dumb.
Yep.
it's just a thing that they have.
And also if you crafted a, you know, one of the components that makes up something you're crafting, so like, you know, craft a component and then actually make a finished product out of it, it starts out with some of the quality gauge already filled if you use a high quality component.
Okay.
Sure. We grow our own coffee beans.
Exactly. The other dynamic, though, is there's four gathering professions, which are basically mining, botany, and fishing.
That's three.
Did I say four? I'm sorry, three. There are three.
Okay.
There's one secret one that I'm not allowed telling you about. No. And so, you know, you have to get your crafting parts from that. Also, most of the actual crafting classes, make some of the recipes are basically ingredients used by other professions. So there's a whole thing of like, you know, getting the ingredients you need for crafting can kind of be a mini adventure in and of itself. And,
well, it sounds like you can also live the fantasy of like, I'm a tradesman supporting my you know,
exactly.
Adventures.
And the funny thing is like, this is full on, like, you don't have like a crafting skill. You actually switch to, and your class is that crafting class. Which is funny because I think like at least one of my crafting classes is higher level than my actual class.
Okay.
So, you know, the whole thing is, you know, you can do all of them. You know, if you want to run around, you can, you know, completely be self-sufficient, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's pretty fun. Also, every five levels of the crafting, there's a quest. And, you know, they're all, you know, like, hey, go get, you know, get me this item or, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, they at least have, you know, different storylines around them.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite, just because it's kind of dumb, is the alchemist teacher. You're basically just the guild master is this super arrogant guy who just only cares about doing research and doesn't actually do any of his job as guild master.
Right,
and
right.
So all of the quests are just, you're his quote-unquote apprentice, and it's just him pawning off his work on you.
Yeah, so academia.
Yes, yeah. exactly. But yeah, you know, so it's, you know, different for each one. One of the weird decisions is that each of the crafting classes is only located and can only be learned in one of the three, like, nations that make up the game.
Oh, weird.
And granted, you can, you know, freely travel to any of them, that sort of thing.
And you can afford the teleport cost, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it tied to starting areas? Like, they want different crafting professions to primarily come from different
starting areas? See, I don't know if that's the thought or what. One of the things I don't know also is, like, this is a really weird game in that, you know, technically it's a remake, and it's mm-hmm. also a game that's been out really long, and so it's been, you know, super optimized. And so, like, I don't know, for me, you literally, so I currently have, like, 26,000, what is the money, gil or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it, a level heist gives between, like, you know, around 400, and it costs about 100 to take the airship to, like, a different nation. So my point being, like, it's pretty trivially easy to get around, but I mm-hmm. don't know if at some point in this game's life cycle, if that wasn't the case.
Mm-hmm. Right, if it was an EverQuest style thing where you had to hoof it.
Right.
Probably not, given when even when the original Final Fantasy XIV came out. Right. Yeah.
So the three different
harvesting classes, one of the each of them is based in one of the starting cities.
Right.
So
exactly.
Like, all right. Okay.
And it does kind of make sense, because the three you know, city nation things, one is basically desert themed, one is forest, and one is naval. And
the
so
forest,
it's, you know,
one
mining,
is
botany, and fishing.
Right. The forest one is Gridania.
I pronounce it Grindania, just because that seems incredibly appropriate for a MMO, despite the fact that this is an MMO with almost no grinding, but...
Right. Yeah, no, I just...
Say that, but then you talk about grinding out these crafting things.
Well, I will say, though, it's a thing where... I think the level cap for the base game is 50.
And then it goes up with new expansions,
right? And I think it's gone to like 70 is the absolute cap, and mm-hmm. basically up to the point where I was like at level 25, basically what I'd do is complete the, you know, quest you get every five levels and complete one of the level heists or whatever, and that would be more or less enough to get me to the next quest. So mm-hmm. like I'm assuming this is kind of like you know, being in the catch-up mode of the XP curve, but like very easy to, you know.
Yeah, they're trying to get you through the old content so you can get into the part where you're paying the monthly.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, so it's kind of fun. You know, there's whole separate equipment for the crafting, which is kind of fun. Yeah, you know, it's kind of cool, and it's fun just running around, you know, seeing the world.
Yeah. Nice. When do you think you're gonna go back to doing like combat and exploration dungeon kind of stuff?
So I just kind of switched back to that. However, the next quest I have is actually to go through a dungeon, and my inventory was entirely full of crafting material, so I'm going through and just selling most of the low level crafting material is just not actually worth anything, so right. I'm just going through and like selling it all, and then once my inventory is open, I'm gonna go and beat the next thing.
Right. Yeah.
So
you still doing the monk?
Yep,
I think
still doing the monk for now. My goal is to get to level 50 and switch to the dancer class. That's like chakram throwing, and has some kind of some bard abilities.
Cool,
but there's great. A ton of things. To there's actually a class? Like gunblade class. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's the corsair pirate one. Go ahead, Dennis.
Well, I'm just curious, from when I played, I think I did Ranger into Bard into Dancer?
No, so Dancer is completely separate. So there's
interesting.
So once they started doing the expansions, generally all the new classes they added, you had to be level 50 in one of the existing classes. Then I think you start at level 50 in that class.
Interesting. Right. Okay.
And I just, for people who haven't played this, maybe it's obvious from what we've discussed, but you can switch classes completely freely. So it isn't like start over character. It's just like at any point.
Yeah. I mean, and that seems like it's not exclusive to this. Like, I think Final Fantasy XI did that as well. But like of this series is like the magical thing, which is your character is like your meta progression, whereas you can level up different classes if you want to have different kind of roles and parties.
Yeah. There's even a couple of classes that apparently like are like restricted classes, so you can, I think, only play them maybe in like manually created parties or something. So like the one I know of is the Blue Mage, which is like just always the weirdo of every Final Fantasy game.
Enemy, it's the enemy skills one.
Right. So yeah, they even go with some of that. But I'm interested to see where some of the stories go. I'm kind of excited. There's a new expansion coming fairly soon, so I'm trying to get to that content.
It's been really impressive that they have continued putting out expansions at the clip that they have, and every new one seems to have people excited about it.
Yeah.
Like every other MMO, by which I mean EverQuest, the ones I played, which were EverQuest and Warcraft, eventually that petered out. Yeah,
I feel like, I think the big thing that I'm seeing different from World of Warcraft is there is a very explicit, like, primary quest that, and you never really got that in World of Warcraft. At most, like, the end tier dungeons kind of advanced the plot.
Yeah, and that was more of, like, a shifting meta kind of thing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Final Fantasy 14.
Yep. So the only other thing I've been playing, well, I guess I've played a little bit more Power World, haven't really made any farther, but whatever. In Remnant 2, have I talked about that at all?
Yes. You're playing as the doggy wrangler.
Yes, that's right. So I made it through the first world, which in my case was like Yesha or whatever it's called, like Forest World. And then got to kind of their weird like multiverse thing. They have, I think, the most annoying boss fight I've ever seen. You're fighting in kind of this maze, and there's all these giant stone basically like
bad fortune for mazes on this pot.
Australians and mazes really taking a beating.
Giant six-sided dice made of stone, basically, that, like, you know, every couple of seconds, like, you know, will roll to a new size, you know, just kind of kerflump through the maze. Okay. And one or more of the sides has a little glowing thing you have to shoot.
Okay.
But if they land on you, it's an instant kill.
Yeah, so it's a third person shooter version of one of the bosses from Titan Souls.
Oh, is that a thing?
Yes. Yeah. I know what you're talking about, but yeah, it's a cube that turns over and you have to like keep track of where the of where the weak point is.
Right.
So for when it's gonna show up and where. Yeah.
And so just extremely frustrating. I don't know. I mean, probably technically it's a good thing that, like, hey, they're doing, like, puzzle bosses as opposed to just damage sponge bosses.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was kind of annoying because that then means if you're bouncing off of it, you can't just get stronger.
Right. Mm-hmm. It also sounds like one that is very explicitly tuned or designed for multiple people. Because if you can cover it from multiple angles, you have more opportunities to hit it, you know, when the weak point is exposed. Right.
And likewise.
So like one person could like lead it around and the others could, you know, could take pot shots at it.
Right. And also then it's, you know, not instant death if, you know, there's multiple people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, instant knockdown.
Apparently the way to trivialize it is to just use explosive weapons. Because, okay. You know, then it AoEs, you know, straight through the cube. However, I didn't actually have any explosive weapons because, again, like, the order of the levels is random. And then got to the next world. I guess this is spoilers, but actually, one I hadn't seen in the first game, and it's basically this world where this race created this giant spaceship, like, you know, world-sized spaceship in order to explore the universe, trying to find, like, other life forms.
Okay.
And didn't find anything, but found a black hole, like a supermassive black hole that they believe is, like, where God exists.
Okay.
And, like, technically, everyone except one person is dead, and there's just, like, robots running around. But, yeah, long story short, it's just this really weird, kind of interesting veer into sort of, like, a what would be the horror version of like cyberpunk type of world?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So
cyberpunk.
Right. No, but I know what you mean. Like space Hulk stuff. But like you're dealing with like automated security system. Kind of things, or almost
a little bit
system shock kind of.
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah. Or like a Soma even.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, so that's interesting. I'm interested to see, you know, since you're picking up you know, weapons wherever you're going, presumably that means I'll get some laser guns, which is kind of funny.
Cool.
But yeah, that's all the farther I've gotten in that.
I feel like laser guns is better if you have a cat companion instead of a dog companion.
Well, yeah, you can lead them around. It's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, so Remnant 2.
Yep.
Cool. Anything else?
Nope. That's it.
All right.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, you know, POW World has been in the oeuvre, and I think it is specifically just taking away from the relationship that they are only pals. So... Mm-hmm. I wanted to know about pets in games that have stolen your heart What what pet from games has most encaptured you?
Encaptured, I like that. I'll start with Jeremy, who says, my horse in Ghost of Tsushima. That horse carries you the whole game, and by the end, something horrible happens to him, and it was just devastating. You get another horse after it, but it will never fill the void he left behind. You are wrong. Every horse is equivalent to every other horse.
By which we mean a poor excuse for a motorcycle.
Get prepared to relitigate that when I say my answer, Cole.
I know what you're going to say. I knew it before I got through this one. let's see.
Jeez,
here.
Enough with the aggro, Ben.
Moxie, what does Callum say?
Callum says, would have to be my WoW Troll Hunter Pet Raptor. Spent a lot of my university years playing the first two expansions with that.
Am I making something up? Did WoW eventually turn the pets into like Pokemon battle things you could do?
So that's a different thing. So you also had the little like non-combat companions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like and that was like a pre-order bonus. Like you would get Diablo as a little pet, and it became like super valuable. Like people were selling them for thousands of dollars.
I don't know about that, but they then added just tons of them.
Gotcha.
And once there were the little critters, which were, you know, just the non-combat like snakes and toads and stuff that ran around the game. And eventually, when they added the Pokemon battles, they added the ability to catch those. Probably the best, though, was the battling concept came out a long time after most of these things were created, which meant not all of them made a lot of sense, because you would have battles where, like, your pet was literally just a balloon, just a helium balloon.
Okay. Yeah. I love when they back themselves into a corner like that.
Yep.
Ben, what does Peter say?
Peter says, for as annoying of a little shit he might be, Morgana from Persona 5 is a pretty decent pet. Also, can we count out individuals that basically function as pets? If so, I feel like Solaire or Sigurd from Dark Souls are basically like pets. Both require a series of actions to reaffirm whether or not they are good boys.
Shots fired.
I think you mean Siegmeier from Dark Souls. The hated Siegfried shall not be spoken of here. And yes, Siegmeier is, I mean, like, and also for Solaire, like you very specifically have to take actions to make sure he doesn't get worms. So
yeah,
makes sense. Yeah.
Just like a cat.
And then you've got the pictures of Morgana IRL, and also in the heistiverse or whatever. Yeah. Dennis, what does Gwen say?
Gwen, showing a picture from Enter the Gungeon, says, this is the dog from Enter the Gungeon. His canon name is Junior the Second. He's great because when you clear a room, he sometimes gets you an extra pickup item. And also, look at the little fluffer. Sorry, yes. Oops. This is Gungeon. Canon name.
Yes.
I think my favorite part is in the sequel game, Exit the Gungeon. It's like a side scroller, so he can't, you know, just be running around. So he gets a little kind of like hover space suit type thing.
Yeah.
Jetpack.
Nice. Gungeon's a fun game. That's I like that game.
I've only played Exit the Gungeon.
No.
Need to get into Enter.
Yeah, it's fun. It's hard. It's one of the few roguelikes that can get around my annoyance with that genre. And I'll finish up here with David, who says, Kiwi from Shining Force 2. You first see him in a pet shop, and if you remember to go back when the town is being swallowed by an earthquake, you can recruit him. He grows from a tiny tortoise into a into a Godzilla-like monster. Yeah, it's too bad we don't have Jala on here. She would be able to expound on Kiwi. Also, Kiwi is a great name for a pet turtle.
Mm-hmm. I love that it gets more ironic the bigger the turtle gets.
Yes, and also the less hairy the turtle gets.
Does that vary over their lifetime?
I don't know. I'm not a biologist. Neither are you.
I mean, I don't think
I'm taking away everyone's credentials.
No, they're not mammals. So
yeah, they're reptiles.
Yeah, yeah. Can reptiles have hair?
That's literally what I just said. No.
Yeah, but I feel like I've seen like dinosaurs with some pretty sweet dudes.
Dinosaurs had feathers. That's kind of like hair.
Yeah.
I mean, aren't feathers just modified scales?
Yes. Which is metal as hell when you think about it.
Moving on. we pumped that well. We're good. My favorite pet in a game is the hamster from Maniac Mansion. Weird Ed's hamster. You can sneak into his room and steal it from him. In order to make him go looking for it, if you're trying to get around to rooms where he might be. And infamously, if you are an absolute monster, you can put the hamster in the microwave in the kitchen, exploding it.
Oh, my God.
And that will make Weird Ed kill you. It is a way for you to end up being a ghost.
Don't you straight up also like have the option to just like give the remains to him?
Oh, no, that's how you get killed.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So yeah. If you, it's a true thing, you know, like just, if he was perfectly safe, that wouldn't be valuable. Right. But now that when something's life is in your hands, that's the ultimate power. Moxie, how about you?
I think probably it would almost certainly be one of the, Far Cry, companions. However, determining which one would be tough. Although, actually, no. Now that I think of it, do palicos, are those pets or co-workers?
Ooh. I feel like they've got one foot in, one foot out.
Okay, because definitely would have to go with palico. I mean, they are basically the real hero of that game.
Now, not going with Palamute. You want to go with just the palico?
Nah, because the Palamute is tough. Like, he can probably run away. It's the Palico that's the little tiny cat that's still willing to face down a Godzilla.
All right, yeah. Ben, as if we need to ask you?
Yeah, just about Jeremy's answer for mine, but take away Ghost of Tsushima and add Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, you mean the dog bird?
No, you're thinking, good lord, are
sorry,
you looking
to wow. Sorry, yes, I'm trolling.
Ben just died inside.
I was afraid Ben was going to take a swing.
Disappointing sequels that have come out a long time after the games that were good, so I'm primed for this, it's all good.
Yeah, oh boy.
I do have to say, as much as I'm not a big fan of horses, that game does... whatever the horse's name in that, I have very fond memories of how hilarious it is that he won't jump off cliffs and will just like eject you off the cliff.
Yeah. How dare you even try? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Nice. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, mine would have to be Dusty from Gravity Rush.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of people refer to their black cats as voids, but this one is an actual void and is technically the source of cat's powers, etc. So, yeah, the fun little animal.
That's a really good answer. I like that.
I have to say this is off topic, but I was thinking about the Gravity Rush show they're making. The one thing I definitely want to be in it is the fact that wherever you activate your powers, it activates for everyone around you. And so you end up accidentally chucking random townsfolk into the void.
Oh, man. I need to finish that game. That's a delight.
The ending of 2 gets super weird.
Yeah.
You want to talk about boob monsters. The final boss is a variant of that.
Yeah.
You've been warned.
Good question and good answers. Thank you everybody for responding. If you would like to do likewise, join the Duck Feed community group on Facebook and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Just so we don't end on the bummer, I'm gonna start us off here with our the industry is collapsing detail here as we go
which one
Yeah.
I'll do the most recent one here that that popped up, and then I'll throw over to you, Ben, for yours. Embracer, the massive asset holding company that has been gobbling up different video game publishers and developers.
Sorry, I know you said asset holding company, but I heard it asshat holding company, and that feels accurate.
Hey, you know, get your punches in. It is they've continued. Obviously this is terrible because people have lost their jobs. Eidos Montreal is getting a bunch of layoffs. Is the big deal, and this is hot on the heels of Embracer just consolidating so much of the industry, and then when it doesn't turn a profit immediately, axing projects. The big one, and what makes this sting a little bit, is the fact that it has come out that part of this is canceling a Deus Ex game that is 2 years in development. I was excited to hear that there was one of these happening, just rumbling around. Apparently it hadn't entered full production, but it was in planning, and, 2 years of work is not nothing. It's done. Bye. Later. You don't get to see it. Anything.
Yeah.
So long, which, yes, it stings personally because we won't get to play this new game, but also, like, just what do you expect? Like, what do you do? Like,
yeah, this is a money laundering thing, right?
It has to be for a tax write-off. It has to be basically this. Yeah, there's no other way.
We're going to get to, I can't think of a game that's done this yet, but we're going to get to, like, what the movie industry is doing, where you fully complete the thing.
Right, do the Warner Brothers HBO thing. Yeah, no, and just all it is, this is not a, we criticize capitalism plenty on this. I think it is only reasonable to, but, like, at the end of the day, they don't even care. I don't know. It feels idealistic to say, but, like, they could release that and it would probably make some money, at least enough to cover its own cost.
Yeah.
It would have a long tail. A game would exist and people would get to play it, but, like, just the fact that I don't know what their criteria is for, like, giving something a chance to get out there, a game, in this established, two decade old property. No, we're not going to do that. Later. Bye. Just going to suffocate it in the crib. Fucking sucks.
Yeah, it really does.
We can move over to Ben's story here. This is something that was in development for even longer.
Yeah, I was going to say, not going to get too much better. My story, something I was reading a couple different articles and got linked to this one, but it was basically, as part of the layoffs for Activision Blizzard, the 1900 layoffs, they also canceled a game that had been in development for 6 years. They'd only released a couple screenshots of it that kind of showed something that's similar to almost Elden Ring with, like, a floating castle, but more like of a foresty type theme. But, like, the added buzz was that a lot of internal people at the company were speaking highly of the game after having play tested it.
Yeah.
And they had, like you were saying, they had, like, ramping up teams for production on this. They had, like, doubled their team size in the past few years, and were continuing to grow it to work on this. So it was more or less in production, but, that got canceled. People got let go and
it's a survival game made by Blizzard. Survival games print money, like, it's just, what is the criteria? What is the criteria to be even putatively successful enough to be given a chance to even release? It's just, it's terrible,
I can just imagine some person being like, oh, look at this. This team size has gotten wildly out of control. That's where we need to cut, when the reason the teams have grown is because, production.
They were making the thing they could sell. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, just go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. I was going to try a segue. Never mind.
No.
I think the piece that's frustrating for me is it's like this, or at least in this case, is it happens on the heels after being purchased by a larger company. And it's like, more resources, we're going to, like, I mean, maybe that's, like, it answers itself. It's like, if it's a shrewder company that's purchased it, then that's what's happening. But
yeah, But I mean, it's also exactly the thing they said they weren't going to do when they were in the protracted legal battle against the FTC about whether or not they could they could do the merger, you know. So and then they do it, and then suddenly, well, okay, here we go. Jobs are lost. Oh, you moved here for this job. Oh, you uprooted everything to come across the company for this country for this. Bye bye.
Yep.
Make your segue, Moxie.
Oh, I was just going to say, also, it turns out that it doesn't even matter if a game does get released for it to get, you know, kind of strangled in the crib.
Right. So say what the story is, and I'll get hedge it.
The sad thing is, whose story do you want to pitch to? Because there's two that can go with that pitch.
Let's go with yours. Okay. Moxie.
So Spec Ops: The Line is being pulled down from digital stores. It appears that the issue was probably them losing the rights to the music in the game.
Yes.
That's where my mind immediately went.
Yeah, that's absolutely what it was. There's a ton of licensed music in there. There's Hush by Deep Purple. There's 1983 by Jimi Hendrix. There's a whole bunch of songs by Mogwai in there.
There's a lot of really good music in there.
Oh, it's a fantastic licensed soundtrack. And
expertly used.
Yeah, yeah. This happened to Alan Wake with theirs as well. They were down for a little while. Whether or not... what is it? 2K sees fit to relicense those if they think they're going to make enough money off the back of it. But this is just like it's a renegotiation thing. It's pulled off of Steam, but it's not pulled off of other online marketplaces at this point.
And does that mean people who already bought it are gaining from it, or just that no new people can buy it?
No new people can buy it.
Yeah.
And okay. At least there is a conceivably worse version of what's happened.
Right. Yeah. They could yank it out of they could yank it out of your out of your library.
Yeah, their statements, at least so far, have kind of implied that they have no intention whatsoever of trying to relicense, because they're just like, we want to thank everyone who's supported us, and we look forward to making great games in the future or whatever.
Yeah, hopefully not.
One of the people involved with it, I think, like, I don't know, the director of the game or one of the leads or something, pointed out...
The guy we interviewed?
Huh? Yeah.
Oh, is that who it was? I just skimmed over
maybe.
That.
Maybe. I can't remember. What's the
name? I recognize it.
Sorry, I'd have
to. Or if you're going from memory, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Corey Davis.
No, different guy.
Okay. Yeah. Pointed out that it's the game's director and designer. Pointed out that the game's themes are kind of more relevant now than they were even when it was released.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, we are all passionate advocates for games as art, and that that they have commentary and meaning to add that is relevant to our broader life. Mm-hmm. And it makes it that hurt that much more to see them reduced to a money-making enterprise.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to be naive, but it's also just like, you know, come on, no, that's sure. always been the case. But like, this is just extreme, you know?
Well, and just the fact that they even set up the license this way is dumb.
I mean, yeah, a little bit. Like by 2012, they should have known that there was an aftermarket, you know, that there would be a long tail for game, you know, for a game like this.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's a bummer. Also, I mean, this one's kind of funny, just because the whole launch has been a comedy of errors. But we told you, we told you the Suicide Squad would be back. What happened just today, Dennis?
They won't die, unlike Batman in this game. Suicide Squad launched and then was taken down as they realized that they had launched the game for several people in a state where the story, the campaign of the game was already completed. And so people were booting up to see everything unlocked, including all the cutscenes and spoilers, etc. And I assume they were kind of just queued up to go into the end game forever grind.
Mm-hmm.
Which, man, is this showing their true face on this, in my opinion. Like this was always meant to be. Live service is too kind a word for it, but like get you through any kind of content as fast as possible so you can make numbers go up while we urge you to do microtransactions.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, just really just shunt you as quickly as we can into a repetitive KPM kind of grind. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was interested to hear you say, Ben, that the story and the writing seemed passable.
Well, so it's like they have narrative moments that are linked together by the gameplay. And so the narrative part does seem...
So they clear the bar.
Well,
sorry.
Right, I should back this up. Like, it's you know, like all the repetitive, like, jump around, shoot things missions are linked by, like, cutscenes and stuff like that. The cutscenes are actually pretty interesting and surprising at times. And, like, they... And
this person was playing through the campaign.
Yes.
Yeah.
So like this, the same level of care that they introduce characters like in the Arkham games, it seems right. like they're doing that within the Suicide Squad as yeah. well.
But mm-hmm. what a way to declare like this is the least important part of the game to us, even if they're doing it well.
It's just really funny. Are you all aware of like the lore and the reasoning behind the stereotype of the like rock band that, you know, asked for, you know, in their contract writer, we want a bowl of M&Ms, but all the brown ones are taken out.
Yeah.
That if they miss that silly thing, it probably means they miss something that's a lot more important.
Right. This was Van Halen back in the 80s when they were going on a tour for a bunch of small venues. They had a huge stage show, which meant that there were a lot of electrical requirements where if every single like line on the contract was not followed, that meant people would probably die. Something might catch fire. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they put that in there. So if they saw a brown M&M, suddenly they have to do a line, you know, a line check, right? It's basically a canary in a coal mine kind of deal.
They didn't also have to trash the rooms, but.
Well, I mean, that was just for the love of the game. So like, you know, you think about canaries in the coal mine, just like, okay, what is showing here? Like, we're going to hit publish on this thing with so little QC that we don't actually see that it auto completes when you open it up. It really does like not inspire confidence in the overall product. Mm.
And anyone with more programming knowledge than me, what could conceivably like cause this that would make me go like, oh, okay, I see how you could miss that.
Object-oriented programming.
Mm.
Sorry, that was a real answer.
Yeah, it's probably just like a config file thing where it's like they were probably trying to do testing or something in a production, but yeah, how it gets through, yeah, that's kind of bad that you don't have like checks in place for that.
Also, why are you doing testing in production? That's weird.
Oh, sorry, that was the more expensive version that we were going to sell you once this game catches on.
Right, right. Skip the line. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those things that, like, that totally is the type of thing that is, like, you know, sequencing and stuff like that is super hard to test, but, like, it's kind of your job to test it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just contributes to the comedy of errors that is this overall product. And for all of the kind of pot shots we've taken at it or whatever, like of being a very misguided product or whatever, God, can you imagine having your name associated with that? Like just it's rough. Man, like we have been lashed. We've been lashed to the bow of this ship, and it's gonna fucking take off from the dock.
Yeah, how do you think DC is feeling right now?
I don't DC doesn't feel anything.
I don't want to dog on the game so hard because it's like there's still like a lot of care you can see put into the game. It's just that the direction was poor.
Yeah,
and like so, I just feel bad that like people were tied to this game for like 9 years.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
With a premise that just cannot work, and they still put a lot of good work into it. It seems, but
that's the tragedy of it, right? Like you know, this is a it's a big title with a bunch of people working on it. You want people to not feel like they're wasting their time, right?
Yeah.
You know, and just that's the I don't know. It's not the biggest tragedy we've discussed today, but it is up there. I do not envy people who are this was 8 years of their lives, right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, that was fucking all bummers. I meant to start with the bummers, but we went all the way straight.
Some of them were funny bummers,
kind of. Yeah,
funny-ish bummers.
We should probably wrap it up. How do you all feel about doing that?
Let us wrap. Buttons.
the credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 488. If you would like to help us out, you know what you can do. Well, keep on listening. We appreciate that, you know, taking the time. But you can also go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can leave a rating or review. You can join the Duckfeed community group on Facebook, watch the multiplayer stuff to go up. All of that is there and waiting for you. You can also join us in thanking our producer, Gwen. We're so good about thanking her and all of the other shows that we do. I just haven't worked it into the routine for this one. A shame.
Thank you, Gwen.
We do appreciate Gwen's work that she does on this.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen.
And don't edit this out.
No. I did. we try to put it in as many episodes as we can. Dennis, anything going on with you?
I will be at Origins, showing off Deck of Wonders in my next project. Mm-hmm. So if you are the convention going type, keep an eye out for that. And I will make my, occasional, plug that I am almost always happy to incorporate, suggested multiplayer questions. So if you want to, recommend a question, rather than just answer them, you are more than welcome.
Please do.
Slack, or on the Facebook page, I will be looking.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I think that is everything. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I'm Moxie. You can find me in Final Fantasy.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. All right, I have two. I'm a reader, not a fighter.
I have that too.
And I have Australians and mazes.
I have that too. Oh my God.
Okay.
Yeah, two for two. I also wrote down funny bummers right at the end there.
Okay. So, 1 second here. I need to write these down. Okay, go ahead.
I only had one. I had Batman coded enemies.
Okay. Ben, what you got?
I got nothing.
So by votes, it is either I'm a reader, not a fighter, or Australians and mazes. I'm kind of leaning toward Australians and mazes.
Me too. I agree with that.
I like that.
That's the Australian rules version of snakes and ladders.
Yes.
I do think Batman coded enemies is a funny one as well, though.
I don't want people to think that we've played the game and offered first-hand impressions on it.
Is it because you don't want to deceive, or because you don't want to be known as someone who would play that game?
I don't want to deceive.
No, I'm joking.
All right, then it is decided.